So I was reading this in-depth analysis the other day where I came across a vision of the future that was so quietly insane. I felt this sudden overwhelming urge to apologize to my ancestors for what we've done with their fire. Now, it wasn't a vision of Terminators or nuclear winter or anything like that, but it was something that was in that general ballpark. It was a vision of a thriving global economy that just happened to have no people in it. No customers, no tired guys buying gas at 2 a.m. No one. Just machines buying things from other machines, using money that doesn't actually exist to solve problems that don't really matter. And I got this impression that the people who wrote it weren't screaming in horror about it. They were smiling. So there is this specific brand of corporate optimism that feels like being patted on the head by a mannequin. You've seen it. It's that polished, frictionless aesthetic where everything is automated for your convenience. But lately, the convenience part is starting to feel like a courteous way of saying exit strategy. So at this point in time, we've spent, I don't know how many years worrying that robots would take our jobs, right? And we practiced our worried faces and followed the advice of people who've never actually been hungry. And we learned to speak the language of the machine. But the machine just used that language to tell us that we weren't needed anymore. So naturally, we got depressed. Nonetheless, we always comforted ourselves with one basic rule of capitalism. They need us to buy the stuff that they make. Even the greediest CEO knows that if the workers don't have paychecks, they can't buy the plastic widgets the factory churns out for us. This is the one thing that keeps the leash on the beast. You can't obviously have a store if there's no one in the aisles, right? Except, apparently, maybe you can. So there's this growing dead-eyed fantasy involving AI consumers. So this is the idea. There's an AI agent, some digital ghost living in a server farm somewhere that has its own wallet. And it'll negotiate with another AI agent to buy compute cycles or data packets, like digital real estate. And they'll use crypto to settle the bill in nanoseconds. It's a closed loop. It's a perfect high-speed 24-hour-a-day orgy of transactions where the customer never gets tired, never complains about the service, and most importantly, never needs a lunch break or a living wage. So it's an economy that is it's so efficient that it finally eliminates the inconvenience of us, humanity. So it's like a wedding where the bride and the groom both are both mannequins, but the caterers are still sending out bills. It's a corporate PowerPoint slide that forgot humans exist. And honestly, it's the most honest thing they've ever produced. So we've been told for years that automation is just evolution. They tell us, oh, don't worry. You know, when the steam engine came, people just got different jobs, which is a nice thing to say to someone whose livelihood just got turned into a line of code. But the missing question here, you know, the one that sits in the middle of the room like a pile of crap that no one wants to clean up, is who buys the beer when the bartender and the customer are both algorithms? So the old deal was fairly simple. You gave them your time. They give you a sliver of the value that you created. And then you spend that sliver to keep yourself alive long enough to give them more time the next day. That was basically the cycle. And yeah, it was exploitative, but it was a relationship. Now, the AI consumer model throws a wrench into that cycle, because what it does is it suggests that the elite have realized that they don't actually need us to buy products anymore if they can just create a digital ecosystem where their wealth grows by machines talking to other machines. Now, I know it sounds crazy. So humans are moving from being producers and participants in the economy to being like liabilities on a balance sheet. We used to be the fuel, and now we're becoming the friction. And there's a subtle irony here that's almost beautiful if you have a dark enough sense of humor, which I do, of course. And the irony is that capitalism is finally trying to survive by removing the very people it was built to serve in the first place. It's like the snake that decides the best way to grow is to start eating its own tail, convinced that it's found a new source of protein. And that's not a conspiracy, by the way. It's just the logical conclusion of a system that values efficiency over breath. So if a person costs, let's say, $15 an hour to exist, and a server costs a fraction of a cent, the math eventually decides that the person is a bug in the software. Then you know what we do with those. Now, if you ask the people designing this, the guys who wear those $200 plain gray t-shirts that look like they came in a three-pack from Walmart, they'll tell you that this is all just optimizing the stack. So in their heads, they've built a world that finally makes sense. This is a world of AI agents, where you have your AI, I have mine, and the hedge fund has 10 billion of them. And these agents are constantly discovering value. They're trading futures on things that haven't even been built yet, using energy that hasn't been generated yet to satisfy a demand that only exists in another algorithm's imagination. It's a closed loop digital paradise. And sure, on paper, maybe if you squint just right, you can see the math working here. But these spreadsheets have a funny habit of ignoring things like gravity or the fact that people occasionally need food. I mean, this whole vision relies on a total detachment from physical reality. They're building a cathedral in the clouds and forgetting that the clouds are made of water vapor and the ground is made of dirt. You can't eat a data packet. And, you know, for that matter, you can't take shelter in a blockchain. But when you live in a world of high-level abstraction, like these people do, those pesky physical details feel like, I don't know, boring chores for lesser people. It's not necessarily that these people are evil geniuses in a volcano lair, though that would be more interesting. It's a little more pathetic than that. It's really what it comes down to is it's intellectual escapism. They've spent so much time in the simulation that they think the simulation is the source of life. They believe that the menu is the meal. Suffering doesn't show up in a spreadsheet because there's no unit of measurement for a broken heart. They don't see a million people losing their homes as a tragedy. They just see it as a reallocation of resources. So it's easy to be a so-called visionary when you've successfully reclassified human pain as just some noise in the data. If you want to know what someone really thinks about the future, don't listen to what they say on a stage at a conference. Watch how they spend their money when they think the cameras are off. The behavior of the ultra wealthy right now suggests that they aren't actually betting on a glorious tech-driven utopia. They're betting on something like more like an apocalypse. They've looked at the math of the world that they basically created and realized that it doesn't really add up. And they've started looking for the exits. Now, we call this kind of thing prepping. And when a guy in a hoodie does it in the woods, we think he's a nutcase, maybe. But when a billionaire does it, it's viewed as risk mitigation. They're not buying gold and seeds. They're buying fortified 5,000-acre ranches in remote parts of the world. And they're building these, underground bunkers with hydroponic gardens and private security forces, which will probably consist of robot dogs or something similar, because they won't be able to trust any human beings. This isn't optimism about motivation. This is the deepest, darkest pessimism about people that you can imagine. So they've stopped trying to even consider fixing any public systems, the schools, the power grids, the trust, because they've already written those systems off as legacy code that's destined to crash. I mean, that's how they view this. The AI consumer fantasy is just, it's the economic version of the bunker. It's really just an attempt to build a wealth-generating machine that can keep running after the society around it has pretty much stopped. So it's end of the world prepping, rebranded by a design firm. And, you know, the plan here isn't really even that complicated. It's actually quite primitive. Step one, get as much of the world's remaining hard value, land, water, energy, compute power, as humanly possible. Or as inhumanly possible, I guess. Step two, build a wall. Wealth isn't about buying cars anymore. At this level, money is just a way to buy distance from the consequences of your own policies. Distance from the unoptimized masses who still need things like healthcare and, clean oxygen. But a bunker isn't really going to cut it by itself, and they know it. Because if the world outside is falling apart, your bunker is just a very expensive tomb unless you have the power to enforce the order of your choice. So this is where the logic starts to get really dark. If you believe that the collapse is inevitable, then destabilization isn't a bug in your strategy, it's leverage. And if the public is scared and broke and, fighting over scraps, they're much easier to manage than a society that feels secure and empowered. It's a moral inversion. And in this worldview, causing harm now is justified because you're managing the transition to a future where you're the only one left with a seat at the table. This is the logic of a lifeboat captain who starts breaking knuckles with an oar before the ship's even finished sinking, just to be safe. Let that sink in. No pun intended. And it's delivered with a calm, professional tone, the kind of voice that tells you your flight has been canceled. But the implication is basically the same. The people at the top have stopped believing in a future that includes the rest of us. This isn't just some fun little campfire story for tech bros. It's being coded into the world that we live in right now. I mean, you can see it with this world without us logic in the way that it's the policy is being shaped. It's a series of choices that only make sense if you've already decided that the average person is an obsolete model. For instance, take the way that we handle public services. When you see a government gutting a transit system or letting a local economy collapse because a factory moved to a server farm, that isn't just budgeting. It's a statement of value. It's saying that the mobility of the person on the bus is less important than the liquidity of the person in the penthouse. Look at the obsession with speculative finance over public investment. We're pouring billions into synthetic assets and derivative markets, essentially bets on bets. Well, the literal pipes under the street are leaching lead and God knows what else. It's a deliberate choice to prioritize these digital ghosts over the physical reality of human bodies. And then there's the permanent insecurity of healthcare and housing. So if you wanted a stable, thriving consumer class, you'd probably want to make sure that they weren't one broken leg away from bankruptcy, right? But if you're moving toward a world where you don't need that consumer class anymore, then their insecurity is actually a benefit because it keeps them quiet and desperate. And it makes them willing to accept any scrap of innovation that's tossed their way. Now, this isn't incompetence or, you know, just the government being stupid. It's a terrifyingly coherent worldview with the policy of a landlord who's decided to just stop repairing the, you know, doing repairs in the building because he's already bought land somewhere else and he plans to just let this building burn down for the insurance money. So the engine driving all of this is a very specific and very old lie. The zero-sum lie. So this is the belief that life is a finite pie. And if I want a bigger slice, well, then sorry, you have to starve. Now the people at the top of the heap are obsessed with this. They've convinced themselves that scarcity is the only truth. And they act like it. They hoard. They endlessly extract, they build walls, they create division. But our history, human history, actually tells a different story. Every major leap that we've made from irrigation to antibiotics came from the realization that we can make a bigger pie. Abundance isn't something you find in a hole in the ground. It's something that you create through things like cooperation and trust. And, you know, the profound irony here is that the wealthiest people on the planet, you know, the ones with the most resources, the best security, the private islands, these people are the most terrified people that I've ever seen. They don't believe in the future. They only believe in their position in it. They're like people on a sinking ship who are frantically stealing all the life jackets and not realizing that if the ship goes down, a life jacket just means that you'll be the last one to drown eventually. So we're always told that the masses are the problem. That we're too lazy or too divided, stuck in the past. We're too stupid and just, you know, too damaged. And while some of that is clearly true, I think if you take a closer look, most of the public hasn't really abandoned all hope. And they're not all hopeless. The people working three jobs to keep their kids in school, they haven't given up. The people starting a community garden in vacant lots haven't given up. But the elite have. They're the ones who've checked out. They're the ones who have decided that the human project is a failed experiment. And it's time to move the assets to a digital offshore account. And while they're busy building these bunkers, a good number of us could be busy building networks of mutual aid to varying degrees. Now, while they're focused on extraction, we're still focused on repair. Or we could be, if we could just change the reality of our situation. And look, you know, maybe we can't. Maybe it's just too late and we're all delusional. That is a possibility. But I think that most people, if given the opportunity to exist in a system outside of the dysfunctional and destructive one that we've been living in, they'd have a different outlook. And I think that's where the real strength is. The human resilience isn't some high-tech air filtration system in a fancy hole in New Zealand or somewhere. It's knowing your neighbor's name and knowing that if the power goes out, you're going to share the food in your freezer. Now, I don't think the solution here is some borderline form of toxic positivity or some variety of delusional optimism. I think we need to focus on practical defiance. And what I mean by that is, first, we have to decomplicate our survival quite a bit. Because the more we rely on their frictionless digital systems for our basic needs, the more we are at the mercy of their exit strategy. So, you know, we should support local food systems, learn how to fix things, literal physical things. A person who can repair a washing machine or grow food is a person who has opted out of the obsolescence curve. Secondly, demand hard assets in public policy. Forget the talk about GDP and market sentiment. Demand clean water, clean air, paved roads, public libraries. These kinds of things are the physical anchors in a human world. These are the things that are hardest to automate away, and the things that the bunker class hates paying for because they can't be turned into an AI agent. Finally, I would try to find a healthy balance between interaction and isolation or solitude. And I know this is a tough one these days. I mean, I struggle with this. But the world without us logic thrives on the idea that if we're all individual units, you know, then we're competing for scraps. They like that idea. And every time you engage in a collective action, like a union or a co-op or just a neighborhood watch or whatever, what have you, you're throwing sand. It's like throwing sand in the gears of their so-called efficient machine. And you're proving that the human inconvenience is actually the whole point. So the idea of an economy run by AI consumers, it's kind of a fantasy for now, but it's a hollow one. That is a world that allegedly runs perfectly, but it runs for next to no one. It's just a ghost ship sailing in a digital ocean, and even the ghosts are bored. I don't think we have to accept a future where we're just the friction to be optimized right out of existence. We are the reason the system exists in the first place. And if the system forgets that, then the system is the one that's obsolete, not us. And, you know, wealth without any faith in people is just a very expensive form of weakness. And control without trust is just a sophisticated version of fear. They may own everything, but they believe in less. And they've bet against humanity. And look, to be completely fair, from a certain philosophical perspective, maybe humanity doesn't need to exist. There will come a time when we won't. The world, or the universe for that matter, it doesn't owe us an existence. But I think there's still something worth fighting for here. And I'd rather not see the last of us as this unhinged billionaire class living in some dystopian utopia hybrid. They're looking for an exit. And I say, well, let them have it. And, you know, we'll be over here in the dirt and the inconvenience, actually living, at least trying to exist in some authentic and soulful form, and accepting all the good and the bad that goes with it. At least it's real. All right. That's all I've got today. As always, thanks for listening.